WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Coming up later in the show, we'll talk about the unfolding impeachment inquiry. We have two very interesting guests coming up. Former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State in the Obama administration, Wendy Sherman. Among other things, she was the lead negotiator on the Iran deal, and she knows a thing or two about Ukraine. So we'll talk to Wendy Sherman today, both about what's going on with Trump Ukraine, and also the increasingly schizophrenic Trump Syria policy. So we'll talk to Wendy Sherman about that. We also have Preet Bharara on the show today, the former U.S. attorney here in Manhattan, and with impeachment inquiry subpoenas being defied anew today. We'll bring you that headline in a little while. Preet Bharara will have a lot to say, no doubt, about that and other things. So that's all coming up. We're going to start today, however, on a local story of increasing intensity, and that is the deflation of the value of taxi medallions here, leading to, at the worst, a handful of suicides among taxi drivers in New York, as you know, and really the crash of the financial situation for many, many people in New York, with now a kind of unusual link to Chicago. And we will get to that link in just a minute. Maybe you heard that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, congresswoman from Queens and the Bronx, of course, added her voice last week to a rising call for some level of government, Mayor de Blasio, Washington, to do more to bail out taxi drivers who have lost their life savings and things like that through the crash of the value of medallions caused by the rise of Uber and Lyft with so much competition and other things. On last Friday's Ask the Mayor segment, we had a caller named Sheila who put this to Bill de Blasio.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to suggest that in the last part of your administration, or in the last couple of years of your administration, you really worked to restore the value of the yellow cab medallions. These are people who, this was their life profession. They partnered with the city in a franchise. They're not gig economy workers or part-time workers that have come in and driving part-time, and they have lost the value of their life's work.
The mayor responded to Sheila's question by invoking the proliferation of rideshare apps.
I think Sheila's basic summation is right. And Sheila, I think one thing that we all have to reflect on here is that this very rapacious industry, Uber, Lyft, et cetera, they came not only to New York City, but all over the country, all over the world, with no respect for existing drivers, with no respect for local governments, and no effort to work out a plan for what was fair, how they should be regulated, what rules they should run by. They just appeared on the scene. And unfortunately, they were able to take advantage of laws, yes, including state laws, that made it possible for them to get away with that. And I think it's a real cautionary tale.
So the mayor here on Friday, I want to play a clip of Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. This is from September 26th. Where she's discussing legislation, potential legislation to protect consumers and small businesses at a congressional hearing on the medallion crisis. And remember, she's calling for a city bailout.
It shows his actual statement of a $1 million loan given to him, and his tax records show that in 2012 he was only making $22,392 a year. In 2013, $23,269 a year. He was given a $1 million loan, making $20,000 a year. And we're supposed to act as though this is his fault? This is criminal behavior.
Mohammed Hawk.
And Brian Rosenthal from The Times sitting in with us, identifying the he in that clip as Mohammed Hawk, who is a driver. So I put Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez's request, demand, position for a city bailout to the mayor on Friday, and here's what he said in response to that.
I really respect the Congress member. I would ask her to use her influence to help us get the federal funding to do that. There's no way that figure is in the billions. You're talking about a lot of money that would go right to banks, who are the ones owed the debt. We are not in a position to spend billions of dollars in the city of New York. We're just not. If we did that, it would come out of schools, it would come out of police, it would come out of many other things. We just don't have that money.
So de Blasio wants to put it on the feds. Ocasio-Cortez wants to put it on the city. She probably wants to put it on anyone who can do it. A New York Times investigative report released on Friday reveals that the city of Chicago's taxi medallions have fallen prey to the same system of price inflation that led to the loss of value of New York's taxi medallions. And perhaps even more of interest locally is that New Yorkers, taxi industry leaders in the business of medallions from New York, had a big hand to play, reportedly, in what's happened in Chicago and what's happening as far away as San Francisco and what's happening with taxi medallions in Miami and Boston and Philadelphia. And on that, we bring in New York Times investigative reporter Brian Rosenthal. He wrote the piece that you may have seen published on Friday titled, "We Were Wiped Out, New Yorkers Preyed on Chicago's Cabbies." Brian, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
New Yorkers preyed on Chicago's cabbies?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing that happened in Chicago. The system there, just like the system here, is that the taxi medallion allows a cab to be owned and operated. And you would assume that the people that are owning and operating the cabs would be residents of the city. But turns out there was no restriction on who could buy these medallions. And in the mid-2000s, New Yorkers went on a spending spree and bought up almost half of the medallions in the city of Chicago, and then really put into effect their business model, which they had first used here.
Who are these people?
Well, for the most part, it's fleet owners in New York. There are a small group, about 10 major fleets in New York owned by a variety of people who, many of them have been in the taxi business through their families for generations. And they've owned a lot of medallions here. And again, in the mid-2000s, they decided to buy medallions, as you mentioned, in Chicago, in Philadelphia, in Boston, and elsewhere.
And you spoke with some City of Chicago officials about how they could have missed the signs that the market was being inflated. What did they tell you?
Well, interestingly enough, one of the things they said was that it was New York's fault that they missed the signs, because as the price of the taxi medallion was going from under $50,000 to almost $400,000 in a very short amount of time, a taxi medallion in New York was going up at an even faster rate to an even higher amount. And so the Chicago officials said, well, it's $400,000 here, but it's almost $1 million in New York. So how could we, you know, say that this is a problem?
And many of the people who have suffered on account of this bubble, which has now, of course, burst, are immigrants who may not have been super aware of how these markets work. Whose job was it to monitor these things?
Well, you would think that there would be a lot of people watching this. I mean, first of all, there's the city taxi agency in each city, but there are also a variety of banking regulators on the state level and on the federal level. There are a lot of different types of lenders involved: credit unions, banks, individual lenders. They each would have been regulated by somebody different. And so we actually did a story earlier this year that said that as many as 7 different government agencies were looking about this and knew of problems in this area, but none of them took any action. And maybe because there were so many different agencies overseeing it, not one took charge and did something about it.
Somebody saw it happening in Chicago, and we're going to bring that person onto the air with you in just a second. But I also want to open the phones for any listener who can help us report this story. If you live or work or have worked as a medallion taxi driver in either New York or Chicago or Boston or Philadelphia or San Francisco or Miami or wherever, we want to hear from you. When did you think that your medallion was becoming inflated in price? Were you ever starting to get concerned that there was a bubble? Were you ever starting to get concerned that there was a bubble not just being caused by Uber and Lyft, that is, that there were forces other than the new competition that might cause the value of your medallion to tank? 212-433-WNYC and tell us your story or ask a question of New York Times investigative reporter Brian Rosenthal, 212-433-9692. And on the political hot potato of whose job it is now to make any medallion owner whole, or maybe it's nobody's job. People will say, you know, some people will say, well, this is the vagaries of the market. And things happen in markets. And, you know, you pay your money, you take your chances. And who knew that apps would come in that would make the monopoly of the taxi medallion industry no longer a monopoly? So I don't know. But should Mayor de Blasio have the city spend all those billions that he said is too much for the city to really cover? Should the federal government do it? Good luck getting this Congress, right? But there are cities with crashing taxi medallions in red states too. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Brian, you want to say something about that?
Well, I just want to, on the billions, I think it's important to think about how much this is actually going to cost, because you talk to people in the industry that are actually looking at the numbers, and they say this will not cost nearly billions of dollars. That estimate is based on just the fact that medallions used to be worth $1 million, and so you should give everybody that owns a medallion a check for $1 million. And I don't think there's anybody who realistically thinks that's the solution. There's a city task force right now that's looking at this, and they are trying to come up with a creative solution. I have no idea what it's going to be. I'm certainly not here to advocate for any particular solution, but they are trying to find something that the government can do that will help these people that won't cost $1 billion or even nearly that much.
With us now as well, George Lutfalla, I think I'm saying that right, publisher of the Chicago Dispatcher, a trade publication, who repeatedly criticized inflated prices from 2006 on, and not many people listened to him. George, thanks for joining us. Hello from New York.
Good morning, and thank you.
What is the Chicago Dispatcher?
Where is it physically?
No. What is it? Explain your publication.
What is it? It's a newspaper for the taxi industry in Chicago. It's been around since 2002. It was born out of 9/11, and we've been publishing pretty much ever since.
And what did
monthly newspaper?
Uh huh. And what did you start to notice when, with respect to this?
Well, I think the first time I started to notice is really probably around 2003, when I think Simon Garber came into Chicago and joined a Chicago taxi operator, and they bought medallions at above market rates. That started as early as 2003. And that's when I first started to notice, but it really, the prices continued to climb for a while. When I would ask folks in the industry, what's the explanation? Your meter rates haven't gone up substantially. The population in Chicago hasn't changed substantially. The lease caps haven't changed in years, so why shouldn't the medallions keep increasing in price? Why? And I got a variety of answers. There was a for a while. One of the big answers I heard for a while is, well, you know, Mayor Daley is pushing for the Olympics in 2016, and you know, Mayor Daley, he's going to get them. And when we get the Olympics, it's going to change the city forever. And medallions are going to be very valuable at that point. Well, you know what happened when we didn't get the Olympics? Medallion prices kept going up. So, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of signs were there, and I just reported on them, and then that was really the gist of it. Prices were going up, but there were, seemed to be no economic rationale for those values to increase.
So there was speculation based on some, but well, who? What's your understanding? And Brian Rosenthal, you can get in on this too. What's your understanding of if the market, the basic market forces weren't changing, as you were just laying out? The population hasn't changed. Chicago didn't get the Olympics. The basic economy of the city wasn't changing. We could say the same thing about New York, Brian, I guess, that the value of a medallion, the meter rates weren't going up, so the profit margins shouldn't have been expected to go up and up. What was creating this bubble? Brian, from the New York perspective, if these were New York investors pushing up the price of a medallion in Chicago and other cities as well as here, what do they think they were investing for?
Yeah, and George can weigh in after this. I think there are three big factors. The first one is that some people we found were intentionally inflating the price. They would buy a bunch of medallions, and because it was such a small market, they had a lot of control then. One or two sales could really move the market. So if they owned a lot of medallions and then they intentionally overpaid to buy a couple more, it would make the ones they already owned worth a lot more.
And then they would flip them?
They would go to the banks, first of all, and use them as collateral to borrow money from the city. And then later in Chicago, at least, some of them would flip them. But that's one factor. I think the second factor is the lending practices. Anytime you have, we saw this in the real estate market too, anytime you have increasingly loose lending standards and loose lending practices, it's going to cause prices to go up. And that certainly was happening in both Chicago and in New York. And then the third thing, at least in New York, was that the city was selling these medallions at auctions, and they were taking out ads, promoting the medallion as a bulletproof investment, as better than the stock market, and really creating this aura around the medallion. And I think even in Chicago, where they weren't having these auctions, there was this irrational exuberance that arose. I mean, this is what a financial bubble is. People start feeling like an asset is bulletproof, and they are willing to pay crazy amounts for it. We've seen this time and time again throughout history.
Credit default swaps come to the streets of New York and Chicago. George, give us the Chicago perspective on the story that Brian was just telling from New York.
Well, it can be pretty much, I could pretty much say the exact same thing Brian did. And by the way, just an amazing piece that Brian wrote, and I hope everybody reads it.
Thanks, George.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And, well, I mean, prices were going up. And, you know, to compare it, there's been a comparison to the housing market. In fact, you know, I was writing about some of these paralleled issues before the housing market crashed. And, you know, I would ask, when the housing market did crash, I said, well, you know, why are medallions still increasing in price? And it was really the answers they got were based on what Brian just said. I mean, because it was a small, they could contain it. They could, you know, we're talking in Chicago, roughly 7,000 medallions versus, you know, the entire housing market in the country, which is obviously way much more massive than that. So the idea was that they could control this price escalation. At least that's what they believed. And, I want to go back to something that was said earlier about why didn't people in Chicago listen? And I just want to say that, you know, in Chicago, you know, the city council, the city of Chicago, they didn't listen because they were in on it. I mean, the higher medallion prices went, the more revenue they would get from transfers. So that was one factor. But as far as from the industry side, I think there was a combination of irrational exuberance, as Brian mentioned, but also, hey, some folks may have listened. You know, I mean, there were people who, you know, read the paper, would tell me about it and ask my opinion about certain things. So, you know, it's a little hard to gauge those who didn't buy medallions. You know, so it's hard to say that. Yeah. You know, there might be folks out there. I'd like to think there are folks out there who did not buy medallions. Maybe for that very reason.
Those people listened who decided to be more conservative with their investments. Would we be having this conversation, either of you, were it not for the rideshare technology that allowed Uber and Lyft to flood the market with new competition?
Let me take that one, because we've looked at that a lot and we've thought about that a lot. Obviously, Uber and Lyft have affected the taxi industry, and it's harder for cab drivers to make money because of Uber and Lyft, full stop. But we found that this was a bubble, and the bubble was going to burst regardless of what happened. And even if Uber and Lyft had not been invented, the prices were so inflated and the lending practices were so reckless that this bubble was going to burst. Maybe it would have been a year later, but it was going to burst.
Let me read for both of you, and George from the Chicago Dispatcher, industry publication in Chicago. You first. Some tweets that we're getting from listeners. Here's one. So ordinary New Yorkers are supposed to bail out speculators who expected to get rich off inflated medallion prices. Here's another one. Let's see if I can pull this up. Why should anyone bail out yellow cabs, Brian Lehrer, AOC? The hell with them. It's a business, and they chose to make the investment. George, what would you say to those New Yorkers that don't want to see their tax money going to bail out medallion owners?
Well, it's hard for me to speak about New York, but what I can say about Chicago, it's not yellow cab per se that got hurt. It's the little guys that got hurt. I mean, these guys, when a lot of the New Yorkers came in, they bought medallions from drivers who were, you know, still reeling from 9/11, and they bought their medallions for $40,000-$50,000. And these guys were just happy to get out at that point. They were happy to just be rescued from what was going on, because in Chicago, unlike New York, I think, the city was still issuing medallions, diluting the money drivers would make on the street, diluting the investments. So I talked to a lot of drivers around those days who were more than happy to, you know, like, they just wanted to see them. They just wanted to recoup their investment at that point, and they sold the medallions. And then this escalation of medallion prices happens, and, you know, they get to nearly $400,000 in Chicago. And these guys who bought the medallions from these Chicago cab drivers are selling them back to Chicago cab drivers now for 10 times what they were. So, you know, that's one factor. And let me distinguishing comment here about this word speculation. I think speculation kind of means this idea that you believe there's going to be, you know, higher, like, cash flow in the future. And I think for some folks, that's the irrational exuberance, like the whole thing about the Olympics. They thought, like, medallions are going to start receiving, there's going to be more cash flow. Whereas you know, this, you know, I would say that's a little different from a straight-up manipulation of the prices.
And Brian Rosenthal from the New York Times?
Yeah, I mean, we hear the argument about speculation, and we want to grapple with it in our stories about how we should be thinking about people that bought medallions. But I think there are different types of people that bought medallions, and George knows this better than anybody, but I have learned it over the last year looking at this industry. The vast majority of people that bought medallions are hardworking people. They're immigrants for the most part. 91% of New York cab drivers were not born in the United States. And a lot of them were encouraged to take out these loans that they did not understand, and were put in a situation that they could not really control. And so I just think it's important to think about the different people that bought medallions. And some of them may have been speculators, but many of them were not.
I think we have on the phones a story from the height of the bubble. John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Hey, Brian, how are you today?
Okay, what you got?
Hey, Brian, you know, I was listening to both the journalists, and they shared a lot of critical factors into the entire equation. I was a medallion owner. The category of the medallion was individual, which is considered a very valuable medallion. Something which they failed to mention or they did not discover was the hand of Russian mob in it. I was visited by, when one day I was working, and a guy got into my cab from a 14th Street supermarket. He had a brown bag in his possession, and he got in and he said, just, you know, formal greetings, and he gave me the destination. As I started to drive, he asked me, he said a name, my wife's name, and he asked me, who was she? I was shocked. I said, wait a second, how do you know her? He said, isn't this medallion listed to her? I said, you know, we keep something in the back of the taxi called the rate card, and the rate card only have the medallion number on it and certain key things on it, you know, the passenger bill of rights, et cetera, et cetera. He seemed to know more about my medallion than I did. Hmm. I played dumb with him. I said, I'm just a driver. He says, no, you're not a driver. However, we would like to do some business with you. And I just played along. Well, these guys offered me a 1% partnership in my own medallion after they will pay me off $400,000 cash. Now, the condition was I stay 1% partner with them. They will own the 99%. And they did the same approach to three or four of my friends.
And this is because, John, so for people who are confused by this story, because these investors, I guess, who got into your cab, thought they could make more they could make money on the medallion, so they wanted to be the primary owner of your medallion?
Well, they wanted to keep themselves in the shadow, and they still wanted the medallion under their control. And something one of the other reporters mentioned was the auction process. Uh-huh. In this entire fiasco, Taxi Limousine Commission played a key role. They were making high fees by bubbling up the auction process. These guys control the inside of the auction bidding process. They will purchase a medallion on a cash basis for $400,000.
John, let me just ask you one follow-up question, because I'm curious, and I'm sure a lot of other listeners are, and that is, how did they know to get into your cab? If they were just hailing you as you were going by, did they have a list of, like, thousands of different medallion owners, and they could look you up once they saw the medallion number from the back seat? Or how did they know you were here?
100%, Brian, you hit it on the head.
Huh.
All these listings are available through Taxi Limousine Commission. Majority of the TLC commissioner, when they retire from TLC position, they work as consultant with different companies. They hire Uber, Lyft. They all hire these folks on a secondary basis. They serve on their board of directors. Whenever these folks leave, they take critical information of medallions, investments, et cetera, et cetera, which is at their privy.
So, John, one last thing. Did you sell?
No, absolutely not. I'm not stupid. I'm not dumb. There was an element of criminality right there. And besides, three of my friends who did sold. Guess what, John, Brian? One of them died with heart failure.
John, I'm sorry about your friend, and certainly that way that he died, and, you know, whatever relationship that might have had to do with this business. And John, thank you so much for that story. Brian Rosenthal from The Times, any comment on that? Is this kind of brown bag, you know, silent investor thing something you know about?
That's a new one. I hadn't heard that. But I mean, I just think it speaks to, again, not to sound like a broken record, but the frenzy that was going on for years in New York City to try and buy medallions and try and make money off of them.
Let me get one more call in here before we run out of time, because I'm sure a number of listeners are asking themselves the same question that Monique in Tarrytown is calling with. Hi, Monique. You're on WNYC.
Hi, good morning. I just couldn't, you know, remark the fact that, you know, there's again, Ukrainian immigrants who are involved with this, and you've got the Shustermans who needed money, no, the Steiners who needed money from the Shustermans, and as it turns out, that's Michael Cohen's in-laws, and even Michael Cohen had, I think, 22 medallions being managed by this management. I was just wondering, is there an anecdote or footnote or any other information about how Michael Cohen and the Shustermans and the Steiners and how they are in the Chicago, New York, Ukrainian nexus?
Thank you for raising it. And George from the Chicago Dispatcher, Michael Cohen owned medallions not just in New York, but also in Chicago, right? Do you have anything on this? Oh, maybe we lost George. Brian,
Are you talking to me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, George, if you can hear me, I was just asking you if there's a Michael Cohen connection to the Chicago piece of the story.
Oh, absolutely. I believe Michael Cohen, maybe he stole us, but he owned 22 medallions in Chicago. And the Steiners are here in Chicago as well. So, yeah, there is a connection.
Yeah,
and Michael Cohen, he may still own those 22 medallions. I haven't looked in a couple of months, but he did as of fairly recently.
Brian Rosenthal, is he in your new story?
Yeah, all roads lead back to Michael Cohen. He owned 30 New York City taxi medallions, but then he was one of more than 40 people we found who bought up Chicago taxi medallions and was part of this takeover, essentially, of the Chicago taxi industry.
Funny, Michael Cohen's name is going to come up later in the show again when Preet Bharara comes on. But for now, we leave it with George Litfalla, publisher of the Chicago Dispatcher, and New York Times correspondent Brian Rosenthal, whose investigative story published last Friday is "We Were Wiped Out, New Yorkers Preyed on Chicago's Cabbies." Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.